Unity is strength and assured success. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. That man that you hear in the background is Calvin Alp from Our NZ. But before we cross to him, I just wanted to make a few points about the Osama bin Laden. My questions are pretty straightforward, and one I think should probably pay attention to them. First of all, why did they dump the body? Was that disposal of evidence? Why was the picture the news showed a fake? And are there any pictures of the or video of the raid itself? And apparently there are, but they're just too traumatic to show the public, according to whatever U.S. frickin' official I saw on Al Jazeera this morning. And was there really a DNA sample taken to prove that it was him? And more to the point, how did they do a conclusive DNA test on a Black Hawk helicopter? And then just willy-nilly dump the body. I mean, basically, in short, where is the evidence and where is the proof of death? And this morning on Al Jazeera, as I mentioned before, there was some more information revealed, the Osama update. Not only was he not armed and didn't use a woman as a human shield, but the U.S. Navy SEALs, who were trained in hand-to-hand combat, were apparently so afraid of this unarmed, frail, old, kidney-failure-suffering, bearded man that he had to shoot him in the face. Doesn't make any sense. Unless, of course, instead of chanting, USA, 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 we're instead chanting, gullible, gullible, gullible. You mean, come on, people of the United States, are you really that retarded? And unfortunately, for the vast majority of the population, and I know most of the US listeners to the show will totally agree with me, the answer is undoubtedly yes. American population really is that retarded. And so is the New Zealand population, for that matter. As soon as it came out that the photo that was used, that Bin Laden was a fake, all the New Zealanders were like, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist. That photo's been on the internet for like over a year, okay? A good friend of mine, Genocide, an MC here in New Zealand, is anti-New World Order rapper, he saw that photo on the internet a month ago. And when he was telling people about it, at his work yesterday, they said, oh, no, you're just a conspiracy theorist, you know, you'd never believe anything. For heaven's sake. Seriously. Okay. Enough on the propaganda of the of the already dead Osama bin Laden. I mean, I don't know. Kelvin, what's your take on this?
I think you're right, Vinny. The first casualty of any war, as they say, is the truth. And unfortunately, we're just not getting any information of any credible nature from any source, it seems.
The truth seems to have been taken down execution style.
Exactly. I mean, Bin Laden was meant to have died December 13th, 2001. I mean, let's look at the US for a minute with their intelligence gathering apparatus. Now, these are guys who can find a mouse parting dust in the middle of a desert with its satellites, and yet it can't find a person well over 6 foot dragging behind a dialysis machine. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, why exactly do they think that they wouldn't be able to find him? I mean, dialysis machines are something that are tracked, okay, you know, because you have to send them to very, very sick people and you want to know where those people are so that if anything goes wrong with the dialysis machine, you can actually go up and track them and trace them, you know, that kind of thing. Well, apparently he's been staying in this million-dollar compound for 5 years. Now, Calvin, let's just shift gears a little bit and change the topic. I'd love it if you could just kind of preface yourself because you have some knowledge of military, in fact, an ex-military man yourself. So, you know, in terms of this kind of thing, would you feel that it was absolutely necessary to execute by shooting in the face an old man with bad kidney failure and all of that?
Well, in all fairness, if you're going over after a target, you're not there to play tiddlywinks with them. You don't know what sort of defensive capabilities they have by way of personnel around them, their close protection units, etc. So it's a hard one. I just personally don't believe the whole propaganda, to be honest. There's too many stories coming out, and you'll never know the truth anyway. No one's going to disclose any option, especially that fast. They have to debrief and everything before they put anything out. So for this to come to light that fast, there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah. Well, it makes you wonder what their orders were, because I don't know about you, but when you're talking about an alleged, and this is the thing that the news does never say, they never say the alleged mastermind of 9/11. They always say the mastermind of 9/11, even though the FBI disagrees with them and has never, never, under any circumstances, said, hey, Osama bin Laden did 9/11, and we've got evidence. In fact, they say the exact opposite. They say we can't charge Osama bin Laden with the crimes of 9/11 because there's no evidence linking him to it.
That's exactly right.
So,
Condoleezza Rice came out soon after 9/11, and she said, in due course, we will bring all the evidence to the public. But we're still waiting on that now, about, 10 years later. And you've got all these drop kicks every 5 minutes saying, oh, but, you know, and they always go back to this, but you'd all be speaking Japanese in the South Pacific if the U.S. didn't come and help. Well, if they had have arrived in the war at the right time before provoking an attack in order to get into the war for financial gain for the bankers, then we would sort of be in a better position, wouldn't we?
Well, yeah, and this is the thing. People will give arguments in support of something that they know nothing about with information that's totally compromised because they know nothing about it.
Exactly right, and I tell you what, we get that every day here in New Zealand. I mean, you try to tell someone about an idea that you want to actually solve some of the problems in your country, and because they've been sold such a convoluted mess of ideas, they actually take that as an authority, and then regurgitate the same propaganda to the next guy, and it's like Chinese bloody whispers, and you get to the other end, and it's nothing like it was started.
Oh, and you're absolutely right.
Takes this position like they're and they're the intelligence agency. Like, these guys have the knowledge, and you have to believe them. And you sometimes you just want to pull your hair out, like you haven't got any. Because I tell you what,
conveniently you've got a shaved head, eh, Kelvin?
never have a bad hair day. Walk into the bathroom, get a glass of water, throw it at the mirror, shake my head, and walk out again. You know, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing. If we have a country that's ruled by intelligence agencies, or rather a media that's ruled by intelligence agencies, or all of the above, what circumstance upon which would you actually trust a single frickin' word that the government, the media, or anybody else has to say about it? You know, I mean, at the moment, the only thing that we have to go on about whether or not Osama bin assassinated is actually being killed is the word of President Barack H. O'Barry, who is a usurper, who incidentally ordered this raid and released the information the day of his birth certificate going into the Supreme Court, apparently. I haven't double-checked that, though, so you don't quote me on that, ladies and gentlemen. And on top of that, the other very, very reliable source we have is the U.S. military. Now, here's a question. How many weapons of mass destruction do they find in Iraq? Oh, wait, they didn't find any, apart from the ones that were marked made in the USA, which they blew up in massive bunkers in the first Gulf War, were producing copious quantities of Gulf War syndrome. You know, why exactly is anybody just that foolish? And I believe it's simply the fact that they just repeat. And I can guarantee you, Kelvin, that even though the fact that the Guardian in the UK, is the article here, says that the Bin Laden photo is a fake, even though they've said his Bin Laden photo is a fake, and even though the New Zealand media has also said that the Bin Laden photo was a fake, I can guarantee you that the dumbed-down slave masses out there won't take any notice, and they'll still believe, hand over fist, that Osama bin Laden died on, well, close enough to April Fool's Day, May 2nd, rather than in the summer of 2001, according to the Pakistani Premier, Benazir Bhutto, as she said on Frost Over the World, that the Chief of Pakistani Intelligence and ISI indeed assassinated Osama bin Laden in the summer of 2001.
Yeah.
Now, Be that as it may, there have been many videos that were released after 9/11 of Osama bin Laden denying any involvement and saying he was set up and framed, okay? The media doesn't repeat those videos, no. What they do is they repeat the videos of him holding an AK-47 and doing a real cheeky, "Oh, I'm going to get you," type of grin. You know?
Don't forget though, Vinny. Don't forget all the conspiracy people who say to us, "No, you guys must be conspiracy theorists," simply because they wouldn't be able to conceal such a big thing from the public because it would take thousands of people to do it, when all you really need to do to control a paper is to control one person, and that's the editor. He decides what goes in and what doesn't.
Yeah, people don't actually understand how compartmentalization works, okay? If you have the man at the top, you have everyone below him in your pocket as well, okay? Yeah. That's how it works. Shiite Muslim rolls downhill, as they say.
It does.
Okay. Now, switching gears, Calvin, we wanted to get into your new political party that you're starting up, Our NZ, and my... In my analysis, the first openly anti-New World Order party, and this is something that I believe that the world really starts to has to really sit up and take notice of, because after all, we are entering into a new world order, whether or not we like it. And was it Orwell or the other guy said, you know, nobody's going to like it, but a lot of people will die protesting against it. And in my opinion, that's basically just enemy propaganda telling everybody to stand down, when the reality is, if you resist, you automatically win by default.
That's right. The whole premise isn't so much we're standing on a platform of people, we're anti-New World Order, vote for us and we'll make your life, you know, peace, love, mung beans, and let's go hug a tree. It's not going to be like that at all. The one thing I've learnt over many years of fighting this menace is the fact that it doesn't matter what stand you take. You can go down the Freeman path, call yourself, you know, the real man, you're not the straw man, and they can't do this and they can't do that. But let's face it, people, they are doing it and they do it. Why? Because justice is blind. Justice is blind to all but itself. That's all it can see. So you going in there trying to tell an artificial entity, "Hey, look at me, I'm real," and they only deal with artificial entities, you are deaf to them. They cannot see you at all. So why do you even bother? Sure, you get one or two people who say they've had these great wins. Very few will ever give you a court judgment to prove that, of course. So no researchable case precedents to cite that you can, you know, go and do all that. And yet you have these people swearing that this stuff works. Well, there's a newsflash for you, people. It doesn't, okay? I've taken on the tax department all the way through the straw man idea there as well. Person, you know, doesn't mean natural person. It means the corporation, etc. Done that. Took it all the way to the Court of Appeal just to be told at the end of the day, well, hell, we're a creature of statute. Parliament rules us, so go back to the lawmakers in Parliament. As if, by doing that, we're going to have them suddenly tell us, "Oh, geez, so, you're right, you know, sorry, guys, for sure. You've got your rights and freedoms back." Yeah, I can see that happening tomorrow, can you?
Yeah. it's just the thing, like the Lord of the Rings, Ring of Power, okay? There's only one Lord of the Ring and he doesn't share power. And if you think that the government is going to give yours back to you upon your request,
you're seriously deluded. You're actually seriously deluded if you think that's going to happen. Another thing that really grates me is again, I fought the same roads people are fatalistically traveling down now. I've already been down. I've trailblazed a lot of these areas people are going to court with, you know, whether it's the driver's licenses, whether it's New Zealand's constitutional setup, because regardless what anyone out there wishes to believe about law and order and things of that nature, New Zealand does not have a legitimate parliamentary system at all. I've proven it. But it doesn't matter, you see. They have the mechanisms in place and they control the gate. They are the valve, so to speak, of the flow. So we can all want the utopian society and we can all say we have rights. I mean, if a man stands on a mountain and he yells out to everyone, but I have rights, by his very action, he proves he has none. You don't ask or request rights. You don't go to the court to have them recognize you. You either are or you aren't. And the only place that I found in my years of hitting brick walls at every single avenue is the fact that control of the legislative pen that has written this illusion is the only thing you can reclaim to write it out again. It's that simple. You see, it's counterintuitive for us because a government is this big ogre. It's like an out-of-control juggernaut, and it's steamrolling no matter what. And it doesn't matter over here whether it's National or Labour. They're two sides of the same coin. This coming election is going to be billed as being a left versus right battle royal. But if we have a look at what socialism versus capitalism, which is essentially what this will be billed as, I mean, they're two sides of the same coin. Socialism is basically state control, where we all work for the state and they will give us an equal amount to keep us going, just enough to continue to feed the state. And then the capitalism, of course, is basically corporate control of everything, and we are given just enough to ensure the corporates keep going and nothing changes. The only thing in all these isms, capitalism, communism, socialism, ism everywhere, is the fact that people are not represented in any sovereign way at all. If you want to...
Isms, isms everywhere, but not a drop to think. You know,
I'll steal that.
Go for your life. I've got a million of them. Now... I'm just kind of wondering, Calvin, is that the difficulty with government is the fact that they have a false voting system that supports the entire system. And my opinion is, and maybe I'm not experienced enough, I don't know, that if you are trying to run a real legitimate party in the current system, that it won't work simply because the system has been built specifically with the intention of squeezing those people out, of demonizing them, of attacking them, of ripping away any type of media coverage. And it's quite the grand difficulty out of it. So we'll get into more of this after the break. My very special guest from our NZ is Calvin Alp, ladies and gentlemen. Back in a moment.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com/chat-room.html. That's the VinnieEastwoodShow.com/chat-room.html. My very special guest today is Calvin Alp from the RNZ Party, and I kind of wanted to talk about policy. Now, let's backtrack a bit. I talked about how we wanted to, how we were looking at a political system that inexorably squeezes people out of it who are actually trying to do something. If they're not currently in power already, the vast majority of likelihood is basically banking on the side of that you will never get in. And this is absolutely true in the New Zealand thing. I mean, we have something like 18 or 20 minor parties or something like that. Not a single one of them has really ever given any real media coverage. And even if they are standing for something real, they get demonized and discredited. Calvin, what do you think?
You're right. We've got a two-state solution. It's either the Labor state or the National state. And both of them are in states of disarray. You're quite right about minor parties not being able to get a foothold. Usually anyone in Parliament gets a lot of taxpayer-funded campaign money. So any new party coming along, not only do they have the stigma attached, like, oh, you're only a minor party, what would you know? You know, you've got no experience in government, et cetera, et cetera. But let's have a look at the world in general and then bring it. You can take this right down to a microscopic level. This world is run by so-called experts. Every State Department we have in New Zealand is run by experts and all these highly qualified individuals who read a book once. How's that working out for us so far? Not very good. So how about we get real people back in Parliament and actually do what has to be done? A lot of people don't realise a politician can be as thick as a brick. Because it is the politician's job to take the common will of the people into Parliament, adopt the uncommon intelligence from others, and facilitate what they've been asked to go in there and accomplish.
So it kind of helps if they're a moron then, because it means that they don't think for themselves and they just do what other people tell them.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly right. We have to do what we're instructed to do. Like I said, the common will of the people is sent in with your politician, your representative. Now, he's to then find the uncommon intelligence and implement the will of the people. And if that person cannot facilitate, then you get someone who can. There are answers to everything, but they're not going to be found in a book. There's too many overqualified people in Parliament. A lot of failed businessmen in Parliament. There's a lot of people who have portfolios are responsible for certain areas that they have no qualifications in or no knowledge of it at all. You know, you've got history teachers running your finances.
History teachers who don't know nothing about history, that they don't realise that they're not the one running the finances anyway. International banks are. Now, is that... Can I ask you, Calvin, do you have a policy for getting the international bankers out of our country?
Definitely. We certainly do. Let's look at our Reserve Bank. It's much like the private institution in the US called the Federal Reserve. We have the same thing here, only ours is legislated into existence, much like theirs, except ours says, you know, it belongs 100% owned by the Crown. And then, of course, you have the whole argument about this, well, who is the Crown? And a lot of people are under a stupid belief that it means the Queen, whose titular title only. She has no executive powers exercisable outside of England, and therefore everything over here is of titular title only. The Governor-General, by orders in council, basically writes himself into existence representing this Regina, or Queen. So it's basically a massive corporate setup. Really is all it is, and we get sucked into believing that it's somehow real and legitimate. So New Zealand, supposedly, at least three times now, has become independent from the Crown or from England. So in all of those three times, supposedly, because obviously they're not very good at doing it, otherwise they wouldn't have to keep attempting it, why do we still have a Governor-General representing the Queen? There is no, and has never been, a Queen of New Zealand. There is, however, Her Majesty the Queen in Right of New Zealand, as listed at the Securities and Exchange Commission in the US, just a corporation. There's nothing to do with people. People don't exist here. Persons do. And anyone who knows the straw man arguments and all that will know that it's just an artificial entity. It's nothing to do with you and I. You look at all legislation. It says person. What happened to man or woman or anything like that? They don't exist because, as I said, we're looking at Admiralty Maritime Law. Not common law or law of the land. So we've already had a corporate takeover. You know, people saying, oh, the corporations are taking over. People have done it. What we've got to do now is focus on getting it back. And it's not going to happen with this, oh, I'm just one man. I can't make a difference. Because there's over 400,000 just one mans who didn't bother voting last time because that's exactly how they thought. Yet that there is a powerful voting block. Then you add to that all our Kiwi people overseas. It's another big block. They all want to come home, but they can't in the environment where we've settled them with debt. We've sent them off overseas because we've scared them away. We send all our best people overseas because we land them with debt here. We haven't got an environment where kids can grow up safe and secure and fed. You know, we're cutting each other's throats just so we can survive. We're forcing parents outside the home to work their guts out just so they can afford to be broke. And people saying, oh, prices keep going up. Well, do you know why it keeps going up? And this is the thing that no one seems to get and no one pushes. Until you control and sort out your monetary system, all other little hang-on issues are just that. They are okay. Nothing compared to the juggernaut that is the monetary system.
Well, let's talk about that then specifically. How do you remove that current system? I mean, in the United States, an act of Congress installed the Federal Reserve, and an act of Congress can remove the Federal Reserve just like that. And what they're talking about is generating the political will to do this. And I find that to be a paradoxical because, the will of the Federal Reserve has corrupted all of Congress. Well, almost all of it.
Well, it's like your politicians. Most of them are bought and paid for, you know. And that's not been I wouldn't even say that's not correct at all. I would say that's correct. I mean, most of our people are bought and paid for. Well, once they get the baubles of office, there's certainly no rush to help anyone else. I think they forget where they come from when they go in. And here's another big argument that keeps coming up every time. It's you people, where should we put you in? You'll be like everyone else, and then, you know, you just get sucked into the system. The difference here is we know the system inside out. We know the corrupt nature of it. We know it's designed to create processes and procedures so convoluted, so extreme in their difficulty of navigation, that it has us set up to argue about issues of no real importance while those that control the country continue along their way unabated. These things have to be targeted, and that's what has to stop. And you're right. You take control of the legislative pen and overnight you can turn this country around. See, we don't want to be career politicians. You have a look at all the people now going back into office time and time again. The same issues keep going up every single election. We've got a problem with health. We've got a problem with education. We've got a problem with the economy. People going overseas, blah, blah, blah. And it just goes on and on and on. Why? Because the issues are never dealt with. Now, if we're going to continue to vote the same way, do not expect a different result. We're not going to get that.
Yeah, well, it's like if you look for the solutions 100% of the time in the 100% wrong place, why are you surprised when 100% of the time you're wrong?
What happens every single election here. We do the same thing. And then, of course, you'll get someone like myself who has the audacity to stand up and say, hang on, this is wrong. And you get this vehement attack from everyone. You get these little shills who come into your, on Facebook. We have an Our NZ discussion group. Now, this is where caring Kiwis get together, and they come in, and they are the ones. See, I wrote skeletal policies that I believe will solve the issues, and I've developed these over about 7 years. And it was time to give it to the New Zealand people and say, okay, you guys take them, and you create the country you want to live in. Create the country that you want your kids to inherit. And they are taking this on, and they are fantastic in their ideas. Of course, there's people, always going to be people who don't agree with something. But usually after backwards and forwards and a bit of animosity here or there, and you know, some of the admins are saying, come on, guys, calm down, take a deep breath, they always come out with a workable solution. There's a solution for everything. We just got to get past the egos. I mean, I tried to approach all the smaller parties to come together and create a viable option for Parliament. But these people, all they wanted to know was, what's your party list going to look like and where will I be on that list? And what can you do for me? I said, wasn't it about what we can do for the country? They seem to have forgot that, hang on a minute, we're going into office to try and change things for the better for us all. And it's actually quite disappointing.
We're talking now about Honi Harawira, starting up a new party called Te Mana. Now, in my opinion, I mean, and these are things that I've heard from people who are high up in the Māori community, namely Vapi Kūpinga, who's on Radio Wātea, and she says that one of the main reasons why Honi Harawira was being kicked out of the Māori Party is because he was standing against privatisation. He stood very firmly against the emissions trading scam, and as a result, the Māori Party, who are, in my opinion, basically just a tokenistic party controlled by the elite of the Māori anyway, who don't care about the average person who can't even afford to feed their kids or pay their power bill or internet bill for that matter. Okay, so there's basically patently no difference, which is incidentally why they managed to so easily ally themselves with the National Party, which is just so obviously the elite-ruled party. You know, and now Honi Harawira is splitting off and creating his new one. And indeed, you've had some dealings with him. Can you explain a little bit to the audience about your recent dealings with him?
Well, in my quest to unite a lot of the smaller parties to bring them together to see where we had room for cooperation and move forward, Honi Harawira was another one I approached. Prior to that, when he was still part of the Māori Party, I approached them through a friend. who took them my parliamentary discussion document I wrote called New Zealand Economic Reform, Monetary System and Taxation, which had the 1% transaction tax idea in there. But that was to be a complete tax replacement. It was not to be just to replace GST, because they try to do it that way, they're going to cause more harm than anything else. Anyway, he calls me after we got some of his relations to get hold of him. Basically, before anything else, it was, he said, before we meet for any sort of discussions, you've got to send me a copy of your policies so I can have a look to see if there's room for cooperation, and have a specific person ring me. Well, those two things were facilitated, and I never heard back. And then not long ago, surprise, surprise, one of the RNZ policies on the 1% transaction tax was being touted as his, and he was releasing it to the media. And then, of course, the Māori Party were claiming that they had the idea for a while, and he just went with it. Well, that was only because I'd given it to them all anyway. Prior to that, they're saying, oh, no, the Alliance had it with Jim Anderton, etc. Well, that again is wrong, because he was talking to Tobin tax, and that nothing to do with what I'd already adapted. I have the information. It was actually a professor from Wisconsin University in the US who first mooted it in, I think it was 2000. I have all that documentation. You know, I give credit where credit's due, and I even speak about the source. But as far as adapting it to New Zealand in its current form, that was my work. And I am disappointed that they chose to, I mean, adopting the idea is great. All good ideas are good ideas, and it's great if they can come on in and have them implemented in some way. But when they don't know how to implement it, then it's like all things. You have a good idea, and a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. These people go out, they start giving the idea to everybody else. They can't explain it properly, and then, of course, everyone thinks the idea itself is a joke just because the person delivering it is not knowledgeable in the facts surrounding it. And that seems to be what's happening now. There's a lot of criticism over it, because they're saying 1% transaction tax on what anyone spends, and basically it'll replace the 15% GST. Well, that's going to have murderous consequences, because, A, how are they going to implement it unless they're doing it the same way you're meant to through our policy, and therefore they're going to so we've got a phone cracking up in the background. Look at that.
What on earth is that?
It's a laugh one.
Well, see, you know, that's the thing. I mean, our country and our government, basically, that's the appropriate response to any of the policies that they they release.
I know, and I'll tell you something else. If we target it, if we're going to target, like I said, to us, the core issue is the monetary system. Now, we knew adopting this approach and actually facing the real reason why this country and the world is in such a mess, and why they're attacking people like Libya, Iran, and North Korea. Incidentally, these are the only countries, of course, that don't have the Rothschild, Cohen, Loeb, etc., banking systems. So that's why these guys have been targeted and taken out. You know, it's all about debt, control of debt and resources. And if anyone thinks otherwise about freedom, democracy, spreading that one bullet at a time, then they're seriously deluded.
Well, you know, speaking of seriously deluded, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulous fluoridated fortress in the island slave chain nation in the South Pacific, to be specific. And we'll be right back very soon with my remarkably special guest from RNZ, Calvin Alp. Back in a moment.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Crossing deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about going out everywhere. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Check out our fabulous archives there, full of more Kiwi activists than any other radio talk show host has interviewed in the history of the world. Or at least in my opinion. I just haven't looked because nobody else has bothered. My very special guest today is Calvin Alp from the brand spanking new anti-New World Order party, RNZ. And, of course, you're not campaigning on a platform of being anti-New World Order. You're campaigning on a platform of being pro-New Zealand. Ownership, unity, yep. Responsibility, or in other words, our New Zealand.
Correct, and it's solution-orientated as well. Time for excuses are over. We don't want excuses now. We want solutions, and people are demanding that. The problem, again, is we have a lot of apathy here. It's, what can we do? When you get in, you'll just be like the rest. So we've actually got we've got a hard road ahead of us. I mean, we will be attacked, no two ways about it, that we expected. Geez, it's already started. I've even picked up a resident stalker, it seems. None of the policies you can argue with, and the people of New Zealand through the RNZ Facebook page are actually creating the policies. They're taking what I've written and they're adding to it, fleshing it out, and they're actually putting in a lot of things that I didn't even think of, which are very, very good, sound solutions. And that's what it's all about, because I've said right from the start, look, I don't have all the answers. I have ideas that I believe will work, but I don't have all the answers, but I think within the country, we have all those answers. It's just bringing us together, putting them into written form, and then following it. And this is exactly what's happening now, and I tell you what, I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. If you have a party that, look at it this way. I have to say this. Because you talk about solutions. Now, every politician talks about creating solutions. Not a single one of them, as far as I've seen, has actually created any real solutions. I mean, if anything, we're talking about the government basically being a big flea-infested dog. One person comes along saying, "Hey, we need to kill that flea over there, and that'll rid this entire dog of flea." No, you're only killing one flea. That dog is still going to be scratching forever and ripping itself raw.
Yeah, or it'll come along where they say, right, we need to get that one person so they'll nuke a city.
Yeah. Well, look, I would want to just kind of delve into it then. I mean, we talk about getting rid of the banking system, revising the tax system. Okay, now, in my opinion, those are the two main methods of enslavement for mankind and indeed New Zealand. I mean, he who has the gold makes the rules, and if you can just print something that's worth more, that's worth money out of frickin' thin air by total fiat, and they don't even print it anymore. They just make it up on a computer.
Don't you have to
pay printing costs.
It's all about the control of debt. If you control the debt, then you control the politicians, you make the rules. People like the IMF come in with a 111-point plan, and it speaks of privatization and that type of thing. I've always maintained that the five key essential elements of any society's economic basis is finance, water, energy, transportation, and communications. Under no circumstances should any of those ever be privatized. It doesn't matter how many businesses are in other people's hands running off those. Those there are your control and what I would deem strategic assets. Allowing those to be in the hands of foreign control, then you have no sovereignty. You might as well kiss that goodbye. In fact, we pretty much have here in New Zealand. So we've got to start clawing it back. And like I say, I am heartened by the fact that we have so many people from diverse backgrounds participating in the RNZ policy development, where each brings a unique perspective on it. And by them coming together and participating in the way they are, we are really tuning out some ultimate policy platforms.
Now, we're talking about the ultimate elite of the activists in New Zealand essentially joining forces.
Well, let's face it, because activists and things like that have got such a rough deal, because anyone called an activist, they're already sidelined. The best thing about the RNZ party is we can't be pigeonholed. You can't call us left and you can't call us right. The only thing you probably could say is we're straight up the guts. We are people-orientated. Now, that does not mean we're anti-business. To think that would be fatalistic. In fact, our policies help business a great deal, and it also helps people a great deal. You look at our monetary reform and taxation together allows the end of workplace arguments between, you know, the employer says those employees are trying to demand their pound of flesh and I can't afford it because I've got debt coming up my ears and I have to therefore increase my prices, and the consumer at the end, who happens to be the worker, has to then spend more money on the groceries and things like that. So he goes back to his employer and says, we need more money. So he raises the prices on the goods again, and you have a cycle that just keeps going. So if you remove the taxes on everything and you bring it all back down, you will find an equilibrium will be created within the economy. You have two economies in the world. You have your domestic economy and you have your external economy, which is, of course, is your foreign reserves take care of that. In other words, you can't take a Kiwi dollar anywhere in the world and buy anything. You have to basically have their money and give it back to them. Where we can facilitate most of that just through trade. New Zealand has a lot of resources and a lot of skill that other people want, so they pay for it. Why do we allow our currency to be dictated as in terms of value over on a stock market? I mean, the dollar bill was meant to be a method of exchange to transfer for goods from one hand to another. It was never meant to be the commodity itself, where you've got people cornering the market on the New Zealand dollar, or actually we feel like buying that whole large area there that they've pretended to be dock land because they had resources in it. So under this conservation, sustainable living crud, they will go and extract that off the hands of the people who own it. And then a few years later, they'll create the situation whereby they say, oh, we're going to have to mine that now. You see, this whole thing is just a deliberate ploy to start disenfranchising everyone else and makes us slaves in our own land. I heard a politician who's been in Parliament quite a while. It's amazing. When a politician is in opposition, they seem to be able to say all the right things, but as soon as they claim government, they're then on the other side. So you've got two people arguing about issues of no real importance to you and I, but they're passing legislation. Have you ever heard a minister try to answer a question? If they ever answer it, of course, they usually say, the advice I've been given, or I am told. It's never I know. It's never I know anything. No, most of them do not have a clue. They pass legislation, they don't even read.
Yeah.
This is a problem. I mean, and this new language called legalese that you and I don't understand, there's something wrong. I mean, in every piece of legislation, there's what I call a Rule 13. That means that it doesn't matter what the other 12 rules are that you've suddenly learnt. We'll change it as we see fit and as we go along. And this is the thing we're up against. So unless we take control of that legislative pen that is Parliament, we've got to be counterintuitive. We can no longer keep running and ducking and diving and trying to find a workaround. You have to stop, turn around, and go straight back into it. More people than not are saying politics is useless, get out, etc. And they come up with all the nicely quaint terms to describe politics, you know, blood-sucking insects and things like that, or blood-sucking ticks, etc. But they don't understand that that's the place you have to reclaim. This whole creation of diversion, where put your powers of observation over there so you don't look at where the solution is. We can fix this country so easily. So
Speaking of powers of observation, I mean, have you observed, Calvin, like I have, that virtually every bit of legislation the government passes passed under urgency with no back talk from the fucking, well, from the effing people?
See, look, I've been doing well contained in my profanity. Especially, you know, it's frustrating.
I apologize to our affiliates for that. I just accidentally let it slip. It happens sometimes when you get so angry that your government's been taken over by criminal banks.
But, Vinny, that's human. And for anyone to say, oh, you can't say that because you're passionate and you're trying to express an idea, that's censorship straight away. And isn't that not what we're trying to avoid? You go into RNZ Group. Now, I had a stalker in there recently who hammered me for 2 days about my background and things of that nature. I answered every single question. I provided proof of these things. I even invited people to my home for a policy discussion day. And gave them all the proof so we could finally put these rumors to bed. But it just wasn't good enough, you know. And these things happen all the time. And I'll tell you what, it's quite tiring when you're trying to fight the very people that you're trying to help. It's frustrating.
Yeah. It's like you're fighting a war on multiple fronts. And quite frankly, if anybody's ever played the game of Risk, it's not an easy thing to do. In fact, it's nigh on frickin' impossible. My very special guest today is Calvin Out from the RNZ Party. Next hour, we will be joined also for a panel discussion by Will Ryan, who all of you remember as co-host of the show for a good 8 months here, and we're bringing him back for a show today. And we're going to get into the policies of the RNZ Party and what Will thinks a communist would make of them. Have a look at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen, guerrillamedia.co.nz, and, of course, support American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. At thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, you can join us in the chat room. And we're joined now for a wee panel discussion by Calvin Alp from RNZ and Will Ryan. But before we go to them, here are some numbers relative to the increase in expenditure of the New Zealand government under John Key for the term between 2008, 2010 and the 2011 Treasury forecast. Department of Corrections spending up 216%. Department of Internal Affairs spending up 173%. Department of the Prime Minister up 197%. Government Security and Communications Bureau up 185%, Ministry of Economic Development up 185% as well, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade up 170%, and the biggest increase of the lot, of course, it's the Ministry of Justice up 209%. With such extraordinary increases in spending on the part of the so-called business-minded Prime Minister, John Effing Key, what is going on here? And it just goes to show you, ladies and gentlemen, that whatever the government tells you, you can automatically assume without any evidence that it's a complete and total farce and a lie, and 99% of the time, you'll be 100% correct. Oh, we want to reduce our expenditure. We want to bring business back and make sure that it's not completely enslaved to international banks. We want to increase New Zealand's sovereignty. So goes these sayings of our Prime Minister in chief, John Effing Key. Mr. Happy, and you know it, clap your hands. Now, getting back to Calvin Alp and Will Ryan. Will, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. I mean, so ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, have wages gone up 209% also? This is the so-called conservative government, you know what I mean? They're not meant to be growing the size of government, and here they are. We may as well have Fidel Castro running the country.
Yeah. Except he might do a better job because he'd completely ruthlessly suppress any dissent. Anyway, go ahead, Calvin. Sorry.
I'll vote for Hugo. Bring Hugo. Hugo Chavez, you bring him over here.
Yeah, right on. Now, RNZ, policies. What we want to do is just have a wee discussion of it and talk about what they are. And also, Will, you have a lot of knowledge of the and a lot of first-hand experience in arguments that other political parties and people would have, particularly from the left. And we don't want to, like, outright bash the left. We just want to completely insult them. And so let's start off with the taxation policy. Getting rid of the current banking system that we have, our fiat currency and all of that, what would be the argument from the left on that side of the fence, do you think, Will?
Stop asset sales, apparently. They don't realise that our whole currency has been bought and paid for. Was it 1974, Kelvin, that the IMF finally sealed the deal? I mean, what is the point in saying Air New Zealand's not privatised, Fisher & Paykel's not privatised, everything's state-owned apparently, when the state itself and all our currency, the entire money supply, is owed to foreign interests? It's completely ridiculous, people. They like small little issues they can get their heads around, and they don't want to focus on the premise because that might actually lead somewhere and it wouldn't lead to voting for Labour.
Okay. And the 1% transaction tax, what would they say about that?
They would say that benefits big business and the rich should pay more, and why should we have a flat tax across all New Zealanders? Because the rich should pay more. They're rich because we're poor.
Actually, I saw the counter-argument on our Kiwi blog earlier on, where a friend of ours, one of our group members, Ross, He pasted it in on the Kiwi blog site about the 1% transaction tax, and a person in there, Grizz, stated that it would basically be our ruination. it would be our ruination, and our business would suffer, and they would do all their transactions offshore. Well, here's a newsflash: most of our businesses are offshore, and that doesn't stop the fact that we still have to live here. Now, the dairy down the road can't set up offshore. You're not going to go offshore to buy your milk. You know, you're not going to set up offshore to buy your power, etc. Everything has to go through here, and every foreign exchange must go through the Reserve Bank. Every bank that operates here, the platform it operates on is the Reserve Bank platform, which is then hooked in to the rest of the world. So to come up with an argument like that, I mean, the guy's taken leave of his senses. And, you know, again, this is what I keep saying and keep going back to. A little bit of knowledge on an area, on an issue, is dangerous. You can't keep bagging something unless you have the answers. I'm sick to death of these "I read a book once, therefore I know" type people. And in economics, that seems to be a lot of them.
Well, economics is probably one of the easiest to understand things, and it's also one of the most highly propagandized topics, you know. What is quantitative easing? Can anybody actually explain that to me? In my opinion, quantitative easing is buying out all your debt and then basically destroying the country later on instead of right now.
No, it's actually increasing debt.
Yep, exactly.
Here's how it works. As you know, every dollar in circulation must find its way back to the principal lender. In other words, if someone said to you, "How much is New Zealand in debt?" you must honestly say, "Every dollar in existence, plus the interest that was never created at the time of the loan, nor will it be at any time in the future." That's how much we're in debt. In other words, we're in debt up to our eyeballs and beyond. You can't pay it off. The only way to keep going is to keep borrowing and keep increasing debt. So when the amount of money in circulation is that scarce and the amount of debt is that huge, they decide, whoops, the system's about to collapse, therefore we need now to inject some capital into it. Now, if they were going to just take free money, throw it into the hands of the people who needed it to basically zero out their debt, it wouldn't be so much of a problem, but they don't. They loan it into existence. Therefore, they take the original debt. They've just increased it by that plus another percentage, and then they've kicked the can down the road a little, and as you come up to it, you're going to get an avalanche fall on your head. So it's all a big smoke and mirrors game, and it's all going for the eventual crash of the US currency next year, and it's going to happen because I believe the new world currency that's touted to be bought and is called the Bancor, B-A-N-C-O-R, I think it is.
Yeah, that's right.
So you want to look out for that. But, of course, that must be a conspiracy too. You know, we're obviously just conspiracy theorists because everything we've been saying for the last 6 or 7 years. We've called it right every time of what's going to happen, right from gold prices. I mean, I own a majority share in a gold mine, and I got into that for one reason only, because I knew what was happening with the currencies. So wasn't it a smart thing to do? I got in there when it was like 700 and something, and now it's over 1540 US dollars.
And according to people like Peter Schiff, it might be heading up to 2,000, 5,000 even.
Well,
that's not a reflection of the increase in the value of gold. The gold value hasn't actually changed whatsoever. What is actually indicative of is the fact that the currencies which the gold is traded in are being devalued monstrously.
It has. I mean, you've got people buying something today for say $10, and then a couple of years later, the same thing's worth 50. They say, oh, the prices have risen. You keep saying, no, it hasn't. The debt's got so bad and the money has been just produced hand over fist that it's so devalued you require more of the same currency to buy the same good. When you build a house, the house is worth one house. It's worth the labor that was put into it, the materials, and the land value. That's it. It can never be worth anything else. It doesn't increase in value per se. It's the fact that the dollar decreases. Therefore, if you wanted to buy that same house off somebody and you measured it against the new cost of materials because the debt added to that, then, of course, you're going to need more of the same currency to buy the property. My mother's house, I think, in Mangere there was $36,500 when she first bought it, like 32 years ago. It's now worth almost $500,000. But it's not. It's just our currency is that bad, it requires $500,000 now to buy the same property. And even
so it means
profits.
That it was apparently back in the 70s or even 60s, I believe it was, the average price of a house was approximately 4 to 5 times that of the yearly wage, and now it's something like 17, 19 times the price of the average wage, to the point where in order to get a house, you either have to buy it freehold or you have to be in a mortgage for the rest of your life. And mainstream news, TV3 reported a few years ago that upwards of 51%, I believe it might have even been 52%, that Aucklanders will never, ever be able to afford to buy their own home and will be renting conceivably for the rest of their lives.
They will.
Exactly. And look, and during the May Day protest venue on Sunday, some of the Socialist New Zealand guys were down there saying, talking about the price of everything going up, rather than the value of our currency going down, and the solution to the price of everything going up is to take down evil America. Once again, no understanding of any economic principles, and you know, when you ask them for a solution, they just give you some nonsensical answer that it's capitalism and capitalists who are wrecking everything, and that's just such a cop out. You know what I mean? There's no wanting to understand the dynamic, and then how can we step in and resolve something, as our RNZ suggests. And so that's what really, you know, when I try and make a measure of someone's ability to understand a system, things like that give it away straight away. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a lot of the left. And a lot of the fake conservatives, too, over at Kiwi Blog, they don't have a clue as to where real debt comes from. I heard one fake conservative from the side of the road at this protest yell, we have to sell our assets to pay off the debt. The country's going bankrupt. So... So sure the left is saying asset sales and everything else are wrong, but the guy on the right, the national voter, is also wrong by saying we have to sell the crappy car to pay for the house type principle.
Yeah.
No understanding of debt, no understanding of ownership.
Well, and it seems, guys, that they just seem to direct hate against a particular nation, and 99% of the time that nation is the United States of America, okay?
That's sad. That is actually a bad indictment on the people of the U.S., simply because the majority of the people of the U.S. are damn good people. Just because their administration sucks, they shouldn't really be tarred with the same brush, but they are. You know, you get an American... Black Hawk helicopter that puts a missile through a resident that kills grandchildren, etc. I mean, they think it's those Americans, not it's the military industrial complex. It's just those Americans, and that to me is, we've got to get away from that mode of thinking. You know, a criminal is a criminal no matter who it is. It's just like if an African American over there does a crime, everyone goes, oh, those such and such as they're all the same. Over here, we have the same prejudices. You've got a Polynesian or a Māori do something, all of a sudden their whole race is cast into the spotlight as being heathens and all that sort of thing just because of one person, you know? I mean, sure, over here, I mean, well, white people over here, we cause more devastation really in the crime statistics because we rip off billions and billions of dollars off people, you know? We're the ones who drive these people out to crime because we've just taken everything off them. So it's back to primal survival mode. And then we wonder why everyone's a bit upset. Come on.
Well, it seems that the whole system itself is totally, totally screwed up, and it's like sovereignty gets undermined like nobody's business, and it gets undermined doubly when you get people from other sovereign nations criticizing other sovereign nations who've had their sovereignty sold out so that they go do bad things when they can't do anything about doing those bad things because they're totally controlled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Vinny, it doesn't surprise me that these communist activists hate on America for some of the US administration's mistakes. They hate on the whole country because communism itself is to take a collectivist view of things. What's for the common good? And so when someone does things, someone makes a decision that's commonly bad, they blame the whole entity. See, that's the difference between, I think, the left and the right, is I'm for individual liberties. I believe that a strong society comes from strong individuals, strong family units, and then building upon that, strong communities and local governorship. Whereas a commie will just look over it and say, what's good, what's in the common good? In the common good, you can do a lot of bad. You can kill people, you can surveil people, you can make their lives a misery. But it you can say it's for the common good.
Yeah,
it's a dangerous disposition.
Yeah, it reminds me of the words that C.S. Lewis spoke of all tyrannies, one exercise for the good of its victims is by far the most oppressive. For those who torment us will torment us without end because they do so with the approval of their conscience.
There's actually some very good applicable quotes that, you know, we could sit here and apply to almost anything we're going through at the moment. But we just don't learn. We just simply don't learn. I mean, And New Zealanders especially, probably actually the rest of the world as well, we've got such short memories. We're fickle little creatures. I mean, we'll vote Labour in because we're sick of Nationals selling everything. Labour will get in and basically sell everything else. And then we'll get angry with them and we'll put National back in and then they'll continue the same thing, the same MO. And that's all we do. We just change deck chairs on the Titanic. We're not actually changing boats. You know, most people would sort of get off on a life raft, find a sturdy platform, and then rebuild. Not us. Oh, no. We just want to make it look prettier as we're sinking.
And that's why the powers that be design the whole two-party system, because it distracts people from them. And the real powers that be are the central bankers of the world, and they know that not Labour, National, the Green Party, ACT are going to stand against them and legislate them out of existence.
We will.
We're the only party that will. Yeah,
we will, because we're actually attacking the real issues, and we believe us. We're not that silly where we don't believe they're going to come after us like you wouldn't believe, and it will only be on character assassination. It cannot be any other way. They can't argue the policies, because this has been written by the people of New Zealand. You know, those who care. Those who care about this country are going into the RNZ Facebook page, and they're actually taking the policies themselves, and they're all having an input into their ideas. Now, there's some very heated discussions sometimes over rights and freedoms and, you know, just how much do you regulate, how much don't you? And they find an equilibrium in all these policies, and they are working. And it is very, very – I tell you what, it's a pleasure to watch. This doesn't happen anywhere in New Zealand. No other political party says, okay, guys, come with us. This is like – this is our nation, okay? Our people – are going to reclaim our parliament because this is our RNZ, you know, and this is what the people have adopted. They're going into the RNZ Facebook page. They're going onto the website. They're downloading the policies. They're having a read through thinking, okay, I've got an idea. How about this? They'll come on the group. They'll go into the group and they will give a suggestion. They will then discuss it and it becomes part of policy or it doesn't. It's absolutely incredible.
It's talking about collaboration, and it reminds me of yesterday. I was called a conspiracy theorist, not in a bad way or something, and they say, well, if you're not a conspiracy theorist, what are you? And I said, I'm a patriot. That's it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back.
Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
That's right. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. And we're living in a very, very interesting time, I believe, one of the most interesting times throughout the entirety of history. And of course, I haven't studied the entirety of history, but, you know, I hear bits and pieces. My very special guests, Will Ryan and Calvin Alp. And we're discussing the Our NZ policies. Now, just bear in mind, of course, to the international listeners, that these kind of policies are things that you can adopt and look at, and you can go to the Our NZ website and Facebook group, and you can participate in the discussion or anything you want and take what you want away from it. It's open, it's collaborative, because, hey, look, all our countries are effed, and anybody who argues is retarded. I just wanted to put that out there. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, bud.
Okay, so speaking
that's
of...
That's exciting for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's face it, it's just so depressing when you think of the grand scheme of things, of how depressed we have come. We can't even get out of our own way to want to change anything. And when we do stand there to say, hey, guys, I've got an idea. What do you think of this? Instead of anyone taking it on its merit, they're ready to carve you up, put you an apple in your mouth and put you on a spit, you know? It's unbelievable.
I mean, it's like we really are like the animal, you know, it's like Animal Farm out there, you know? And we're not the ones that get to rule the farm. We're the ones who wind up on the dinner table.
In the communist sense or a zoo sense, Vinny?
I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
Right, my favorite society.
We've got to be well and truly milked before they send us off to slaughter, remember?
Oh, yeah, oh, absolutely. Course. They don't want all that Monsanto pus in their milk. Now,
that's another thing. That crud has to go. We have to make sure that does never stays in this country, a total ban on all that Monsanto rubbish. I mean, Monsanto makes his makes its money on especially it makes profit off hunger, and it's also a tool. You know, if you hold food and you've got someone starving and you don't give it to them unless they do something for you, they're going to do it. They'll compromise their own souls just so they can eat. And you know, that's again, humanity's given way to competitive rivalry. We're too busy cutting each other's throats than actually looking after our fellow man. And of course,
oh, but Kelvin, yeah. This is not the proper venue to discuss this.
I know. Yeah, well, when I've been to court, same sort of thing. That's what they say. It always comes up the same thing. It doesn't matter how great your argument is, or even if you're right. You know, it's like it's not often you're right, but you're wrong this time. You know, and it's quite pathetic. I mean, they always say that. This is a wrong type of forum for this type of challenges. You must go back to the lawmakers in Parliament. Well, hang on a minute. I'm here because of those same lawmakers in Parliament. And aren't you meant to be independent, judicial? Were we meant to get remedy at law? Oh, no, sorry. We've got a Rule 13. Didn't I tell you about that before? You know?
Well, let's think about real solutions here, because in my opinion, yes, a real politician's job is to create problems rather than solutions, so that he can create more employment for himself.
In that case, he's doing a bang up job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, more jobs are good for the economy, aren't they? Even if they're jobs created by creating problems.
Especially if you have a shareholding in Merrill Lynch and some of the debt that your country's getting into it at, some people say, $250 million a week. It's actually $450 million a week. It's been held by that same company that you're making a profit off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like conflict of interest is like, I don't know, it almost seems like a prerequisite of being a parliamentarian these days. Any parliamentarian who I look at very, very closely, or at least so far, and I haven't really looked into too many of them, to be honest, but there's a shockingly large amount of conflicts of interest in there. And the very definition of corruption is the misuse of public office for private gain. And if we have people in public office for private gain, then why exactly is Transparency International's corruption, quote-unquote, perception index saying that we're like the top three least corrupt countries in the world, when the reality is we're probably the least transparent and, in my opinion, one of the most corrupt. And the fact of the matter is our corrupt people are so skilled at being corrupt that they don't get caught. Hence, there's no perception of corruption.
I definitely want to meet the people who wrote that report. I want to have them tested as to their mental fitness.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they should just be, locked in a padded room in a psychological institution, a psychiatric institution, and given copious amounts of the pharmaceutical drugs from the companies that they lobby for.
Forced medication that some of our people here are getting arrested. They're being put into medical centres and they're being force-fed medication here as well, just because they have a difference of opinion or they're standing their ground on an issue. That's actually happening here and now, which is, it's a dangerous precedent. It really is.
Well, that takes us to an edge point, doesn't it? I mean, how do we protect individuals from forced medication, which takes many forms in this country, people wouldn't imagine? New Zealand is one of only three nations in the world to have an uncodified, unwritten constitution. We have this lame Bill of Rights Act 1990 that gets written over with things like the Search and Surveillance Bill. So I suggest, I think we all agree here, we need a constitution agreed upon via referenda that enshrines the rights of all New Zealanders regardless of race or religion.
And what's the RNZ policy on binding referendum?
It's a must. It's an absolute must. In fact, the RNZ party policy on the constitution itself is decentralisation, limited government, decentralisation of back to the old borough councils, even where the communities, local issues have local solutions applied, where they don't have to go through this Resource Management Act and paying hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases just to change a light bulb. Or take months and months to fill a pothole in the ground where they used to be able to see a problem, go over there, fix it up, and it was done. Yeah, we've got so controlled that it's now becoming second nature where we don't breathe without permission, and it's tragic.
I say it's better to ask forgiveness than to ask for permission, because if you're asking for permission, it means that you're not the person self-determining your own actions, It's like you have to ask somebody else. Yep. And that's not liberty. That's not effing freedom,
I mean, having to ask for rights. Please, teacher, can we have a, lolly? It's pathetic. It really is.
Let's talk about definitions here. Calvin, first, what does freedom mean to you and what does rights mean to you?
Well, in all honesty, I think the Americans had it right at the back of their framing of their constitution. Of course, since that point, it's been bastardized, really, with so many amendments. It's now become a lame duck. But all those amendments, under the law is... aren't really meant to exist, but the mechanisms in place of control, just like here in New Zealand, are such that they have the force and effect where might is right, because if you start letting incremental bites taken out of an apple, sooner or later, before you realize it, and you've compromised and let that little bite go, and then the next one, the next, you're down to just the core. And once they start eating into that core, which is our society, everything goes to hell in a handbasket, and we're seeing that now. Everything is going down. You've got people, like I said, they're forced out to work just so they can afford to be broke. Then we tell them, because they're working such long hours, your children are juvenile delinquents, but we've passed a law stating you can't even discipline them. So we can bag you over here for not looking after your kids, but by the same token, we're not giving you the responsibility you are meant to have to make sure they're in line. And all because this country's so far in debt and we've borrowed so much money that there is no way out of it except to start reversing it. We've got to take this country back, get that constitution in place. And if you want freedom, you want real, I'm not even going to call it democracy, because over here we haven't got a democracy, we've got a conocracy. They've conned us all the way to the bank, literally.
I think it's more correctly termed a kleptocracy, governance by thieves.
Yeah.
Now, Will, what's your definition of rights and freedom?
Well, you know, I wouldn't call myself solely libertarian, but yeah, I'm a fan of people like John Locke. I'm a fan of self-determination, and I also believe that most people on the planet are good people. I would just say that some of our negative trappings are exploited by those at the top who know how to push our buttons and control and direct us. And a lot of the stuff you see on TV and the media, it doesn't help our cause in that area. So as far as defining freedom, I'm a big fan of the U.S. Constitution. But a constitution's only as strong as the people behind it to defend it. And sadly, most people's brains have gone into Britney Spears and Lady Gaga lyrics rather than understanding the U.S. Constitution. And that's just the way it is.
What's this? Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
That's like a mass world young population brainwash. Have you seen the turkey?
I'm in full agreement with Bill Hicks and his criticism of, what was it, New Kids on the Block, you know. The one thing I really want to do is see him, get into the middle of the street and have get his one chin hair that he'd been working on for 3 effing years caught in the front wheel of his scooter, and it pulls his head off like a champagne cork coming out. And then it's like he's in the middle of a freeway like a plasma spring. It would crack me up for days.
But in seriousness, guys, I mean, when they want to say that we're all kooks here, you know, when someone listens to this, some Labour or Nationalite wants to listen to this and go, what a bunch of kooks, they don't know what they're talking about, and think that the average person out there who's listening to Justin Bieber and Keisha is normal and sane, I mean, sit down, Justin Bieber, with us. Vinny, hook up an interview with Justin Bieber, please, and let's
I'll get right on it, man.
Any of us versus Justin Bieber on a range of social indices and markers, and let's see who's got their head screwed on. We are saying the average person behind Bieber is not, and some things are just absolutists, and so drawing that back to a constitution, people say, oh, you need to amend it because it needs to be modernized, and how can you have something 230 years old relevant to today? Well, some things never change, okay? The earth still goes around the sun, men and women still need to reproduce. Some things never change. And so we can enshrine those core principles of any healthy community within a legal document that says no to a big government trying to rail over people.
Okay, well, let's talk about those principles. If we had to briefly summarize exactly what RNZ would change about our current society, you know, on a blow by blow basis, and I think we've only got a few minutes left in this segment, but if you could squeeze it in there, Calvin, go for it.
You want to know what our policy directions? Quick synopsis of them.
Yeah.
Okay, a constitution that protects the rights and freedoms of all people. It doesn't matter who you are. Now, in this country, we have a massive rift between Māori and non-Māori, and it's played up like it's a them and us all the time, which is tragic because it's a load of rubbish. It's nothing but propaganda, okay? They have the white guy basically believing that if the Māori get a chance to be self-determinant, they're going to set up a drug alley down your street, they're going to rape your missus as she walks out the driveway, and they're going to jack your car and they're going to be up on crates, you know, and then they're going to bash your dog up. If they're not, they're going to eat it soon after. This is the fear-mongering that's been pushed throughout New Zealand society. So, of course, the whites start banding together and saying, no way, don't let these guys get a head up at all, you know, because they're not given the facts, they're not given history. The RNZ party has the policies where Māori can have exactly what they are after. everything that they are after, they can have. They can have full self-determination of themselves. Now, there is no such thing as sovereignty in a collective. Collective sovereignty is rubbish. So anyone who believes that a group can be sovereign over another, you're deluded. Okay? My sovereignty stops where your body starts. That's how it works. And anyone who wants to challenge that, bring that on. As sovereigns, individually, we collectively decide we will delegate to another lot of people the responsibility to look after certain areas that we don't want responsibility for. Like, okay, someone is going to invade the country. You guys make sure you take care of that threat while we carry on pursuing our happiness in our lives. You know, look. Let's look at land issues in this country. 66 million acres of Māori land stolen, and that's a fact. I mean, it's just it's a fact. It doesn't matter how you want to spin it, or if you want to be a redneck and say, I mean, look, I'm white. Okay, sure, I've been called a white supremacist and a Māori radical. I mean, I wish they'd make up their mind. What am I? If you're going to give me both polar extremes, I must be pretty balanced. So, tackle Dockland. Okay, give it back to Māori. They are very good at what they used to do. They know how to be stewards of the land. So give it back to them. I mean, it doesn't mean they're not going to allow us to go in. It's quite simple. You give someone more responsibility, they are going to be more responsible. These are facts. And yeah. any change from one area to another, you're going to have the kid in the candy store type mentality. Once more policies come in, we're going to give you more money. You're going to be
able to... We'll be right back. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Calvin Alp and Will Ryan. Back in a moment at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back to the digital wasteland. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. If you're curious and you're tuning into the show for the first time, bear in mind we are the... I don't know, guys. Would you probably say it's the number one truth or talk show in New Zealand? I certainly would, but that's me. I'm biased. Now we have a few issues to come. We have a few issues to run through, and I don't want to flatter myself. Now let's go. First one: treaty issues. Calvin, take it away.
Okay, for the benefit of overseas listeners and even ones in New Zealand who just are not up to play on this whole aspect, we have more than one treaty in this country. One's trying to pass itself off as being legitimate, which is an English version called the Treaty of Waitangi, and the other one is the legitimate version, internationally recognised at law, called Titiriti o Waitangi. Okay? Now, translated, it may say the same thing, but the literal translations of the texts, they are completely different. We subscribe to the Titiriti o Waitangi as being the valid one, just like its predecessor, who was the... which was the start point for the Titiriti's creation, which is the Declaration of Independence, 1835. Now, these things are valid. These things are real. These things are inescapable. But these things have not been educated to the public. And these things have got to change. And I believe that we can implement or we can bring those back, entrench them in any constitution, and still maintain all our own rights and freedoms without any compromise. We're not going to lose anything. We're going to enhance. This is two nations and all the other guests working together to make a better country. You can't beat that. It's only fear and ego that prevents us coming together to do that. And we are a party about bringing people together. No one's going to be disadvantaged or left behind, and we're going to move forward together. It's as simple as that. There is no discrimination.
Okay, that covers the treaty issue. The next one we have is health sector, being the second to third leading cause of death in New Zealand. What's the policy ramifications there?
Well, we don't have a health policy. We don't have a health system in this country. We have an illness maintenance system. Okay, we're maintaining levels of illness so pharmaceutical companies can keep pushing crap down our throats. Now, I'm not saying pharmaceutical drugs are bad at all, because there have been some very good advances in modern medicine that have helped a great deal, extend life, etc. But a lot of them are very harmful, and it's not till 20, 30 years later that we're all, you know, people have been dying from it and getting diseased from it, that we realize that, and that's suddenly pulled. Look at those women's contraceptive pill, the Dian 35s or whatever it was. It caused cancer and all the manner of things. But while people are dying, it's no, we've got all these research papers here by our paid shills say, no, there's nothing wrong with it. Of course, the weight of evidence just says, well, you know, you can't really deny it anymore. So what we're saying as far as the RNZ party policy is, we must value modern-day medicine along with natural health medicine. We do not want our natural health medicines to be controlled by any international partnership agreement with Australia, like the Trans-Tasman Therapeutic Goods Act, etc., because that will just lose our sovereign right to decide and have access to our health supplements, and that is not going to happen on our watch.
Okay, next we have education, and there seems to be quite a lack of it, especially about the reality of politics, don't you think? Take it away, Gable.
Yep. Education's another thing. We've got a system of dumbing down. We're trying to create mindless slaves who will just do it, who have a capacity to have good memories and obey instruction. We're turning out robots. Well, it's time we changed the chip in that robot. What I'm saying is if the state is going to be involved in any type of education, they must teach children the ability to learn. In other words, they must teach them the art of learning itself, not just to listen and regurgitate the same information. Most qualifications in this country have it that you get a certificate if you're able to regurgitate some information you've heard over the last 4 years to somebody else. They pat you on the head, send you out into the world, and then you continue stuffing things up just like they did. You know, this whole world is run by experts, as I said before, and how's that working out for us? It's not. It's time to change. So what I'm saying is this. Teach the kids the basics. Let's teach them to read, write, and comprehend properly, how to articulate, how to get a range of basic facts and be able to convey those in an articulate manner. But as far as anything else, that's it. Teach them different a wide range of subject matter. Teach them a different language, especially. Put Māori in school and have them learn that. You know, just as teasers, as things to help them develop. And you do it from a child, from a child, fine. It'll be like nothing to them. You try to force an adult to do it, they're going to try and cut your throat, you know. So it's basically all about learning. So teach them to think. Teach them to have a critical analysis of those things around them. And teach them, more importantly, to question everything, believe nothing blindly. Otherwise, well,
encourage them to go home, I would add. Encourage them to go home and actually inform themselves, you know, to read encyclopedias, to scour the internet, to have an understanding of history and their history, connect to their identity too. But you can't force any of this. This is all individual liberty that needs to be pursued.
Exactly. And make sure that you... And you've got to make sure that you value the academic pursuits on an equal basis to the practical pursuits. Because let's face it, we are not all going to be academics. And what the fatal thing we're doing to our children these days is we're going to tell them because they didn't pass a certain test at school that they're failures. But they're not. It just means their skill base lies somewhere else. It's up to us to identify their natural leaning and then create the opportunities where they can flourish at that. Because I tell you what, if you've got a person working in a job they love, the professionalism, the attendance and everything goes through the roof. That is an absolute fact. And if not going to adopt that approach, then you're going to continue to turn out delinquents who care for nothing but what they can, but chasing skirt and causing mayhem. These are facts.
Like you, Kelvin. Now, what we're talking about here... I just wanted to say that the problem that we really have with our education system is it's not education, it's indoctrination to go into a system and they're taught to regurgitate rather than to think laterally. Now, moving on here, we want to talk about the United Nations. Now, as many of the listeners will know, the United Nations set up by Nazi Party members, and the building itself was donated by one of the biggest banking families in the world, by Mr. John D. Rockefeller. So the origin of which doesn't look good for anybody. So what's the policy for the UN in terms of the NZ party?
Get out of it. True. Well, look, you've got wars going on all over the world, okay? And we're basically on a killing... Mankind is on a killing frenzy. Well, and the only reason we're on a killing frenzy is because we've built up these massive militaries through business and all it's for is to open up foreign markets. That's it. The military is the sharp end of a political will. So if we want somebody's resources, we send our military in under some rubbish like it's freedom, democracy and all that. As I've indicated once before, you look at East Timor, 25 years, we knew that that was illegally annexed by Indonesia. No one cared. They found oil in the Timor Sea and all of a sudden that country had to be liberated. Libya is the same thing. It's so clear. It's only the people who are not allowed to think or can't because they are working too hard and the debt will come up and overtake them if they did stop to look around. You know, this is, we've got to reverse this. So all these wars are funding military machines. And isn't it funny how the five permanent members who have veto power, in other words, nothing gets done without them. If they don't want a certain resolution passed, they'll just veto it and it's all over. They are also the five biggest arms manufacturers and dealers in the world. It is in their interests that wars are propagated and wars are fought. These things, and they're also some of the biggest drug pushers in the world. The CIA, I mean, and I'm saying this on air, so you can come after me, you can quote me, try to take me to jail, and I will bring out my CIA mates who will even stand their ground and tell you. These guys have a black budget because they push drugs. This war on drugs is a load of rubbish. They spend multi-billion dollars a year to get rid of their competition only so they can control the drug markets. Noriega was a typical example. You know, these things, in fact, no one wants to address them and no one wants to say them out loud. Well, I just did.
Yeah, and in the end, everything goes back to the beginning, and we talk about the war in Afghanistan at the very start of the show, and something tells me that despite the fact that the reason for being in Afghanistan was to get Osama bin Laden is now gone, are they going to move that gigantic CIA base that's there? Are they going to stop our troops from guarding poppy fields? Are they going to stop smuggling heroin out with C-130s and the Hercules aircraft rented through the U.S.? Through the U.S. fire service. No, they're not going to do all of that because the whole thing is a freaking sham. And the UN-mandated NATO bombing of Libya is absolutely no different. It is simply the theft of a sovereign country's ability to defend itself, to provide for its own people, that kind of thing.
I just wanted to say that the average National Party supporter who's thinking, oh, what a bunch of hippies here, you guys hate our troops and everything else. No, I support our troops. I support our troops as individuals on an individual basis. I support the SAS guys overseas, but I do not support the mandate that comes from up on high and all the political and the political will that's behind that. As Kelvin talked about, you know, there are larger motives at hand, and we are also for a strong defence policy for New Zealand to defend us from real enemies, both foreign and domestic, but that doesn't mean jumping aboard foreign wars started by the US or Britain just for the sake of strengthening our trade relations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and if we are going to respect our troops, how about, A1, we don't send them to die for a lie, okay?
Yep, exactly right, mate. And another thing, too, about the UN, we can no longer be a dumping ground for refugees. If the UN is that concerned, rather than basically become people traffickers, which is exactly what that is, trafficking to different people throughout the world, different countries, then why don't they go in there and fix the nations that they're saying are real bad rogue states? Why? Because there's no resources there. There's no resources there. You won't find them there.
Okay. You
know? And the UN...
Great show, guys. We just kind of had to wrap up now. So, Kelvin, fire out your websites, and, hey, we're done. This has been a freaking amazing show.
Okay, www.ournz, that's ournz, .net.nz, or .org.nz, or .net, or .info. Either way, it'll get you there. And if you want to have a look on Facebook and join in and help to create the country you want to live in, then go to Facebook, type in a search, ournz, group, and it'll come to us. Request to join, we'll let you in. And believe me, you can say what you like. You can take a shot at us as well. We censor nothing. We're not about censorship in any way. And believe me, if I was, I'd get rid of half the rubbish that was talked about me, okay? But I leave it there because everyone has to see where everyone's coming from. Thanks, guys.
Yep. All right. That concludes another exciting edition of the Vinny Eastwood Show today, ladies and gentlemen. My guests have been Kelvin Alp and Will Ryan, and we'll see you again sometime.